Welcome to Editing Loud, where we give you insight into how the news decisions are made with South Africa's top editors. Guys, let's talk about KPMG to start. I know it's been a recurring subject for the last couple of weeks. But Tim, KPMG, the disaster seems to be getting worse for them. I imagine that they thought that it would quell the trauma a few weeks ago when they put out their statement, but yet the rage seems to be becoming more incandescent as the day goes by. Is that fair?
No, you know, I mean, I think that the problem is that, you know, if you have a big reputational problem, there's almost nothing you can do to satisfy the sort of critics, because when everybody sits in their boardrooms and decides, okay, should we sign up for KPMG for another couple of years, it's very easy to say, let's go with someone else. You know what I mean? There's no real. Incentive on the part of people in boardrooms to actually stick with KPMG. That's the problem. You have to argue at the board why you want to stick with the organization, and no one wants to do that. So this past week, I think two or three companies, AVI was one.
Sani has already cut ties.
Have now said that they're going with a different house, and I expect that will continue. I mean, I think also the problem with KPMG was, although they cleared out, a whole bunch of the top management and so on. It's not clear in my mind what they're going to do differently. I think that's where they could have done more work. You know, they need to demonstrate that this is going to change their actual action in future, not just shuffle a few people around.
It does seem that they basically didn't have all the evidence they needed when they made a rash decision and just got everyone out of there, because they didn't charge them. They basically paid them off severance packages, which indicates that they hadn't done the work needed, that it was kind of a rash, panicked move.
I think that's true. I mean, it's a sort of strange situation. They obviously were trying to kind of do something dramatic and, really address the problem. In a way, I kind of feel for them, because a lot of the other organizations who are involved in this, like McKinsey and SAP, they say, KPMG try to, get in front of the whole debate, and actually it's just made it worse. It just adds fuel to the fire. So let's rather not do anything. Let's rather just admit nothing. So if you don't give KPMG credit for what they've done so far, then it just encourages all of the others to do nothing, and that's what we're seeing.
Siknati, do you agree? I mean, how do you think KPMG mishandled this crisis?
I wish I could feel like Tim and feel for them. Really. Wish I could feel for them. And I disagree, by the way. They were not in a rush. They were not caught out. They were not trying to do something. They were actually trying to lie even further. They said these people have resigned, as if they got rid of them, like pressurized them to resign. When they get pressed in Parliament, how exactly did those people leave? We actually facilitated their exit by paying them severance packages. Now, that's very different from someone who's being fired or being pressured to resign because of some illegal things they did. So they were perpetuating the lie. Let's just start there. And who must then at that point still believe anything they say? They go all out, we've cleared them, which is a bloody lie. They were trying to again still hide the matter under the carpet and pretend that everything is now in order. It's far from it. They have to come out now and release the terms of reference and indeed do a proper, a transparent investigation into what went wrong and how they are going to fix it. Only then, and then only, may they have a chance of regaining some trust.
Ron, in terms of regaining trust, I don't even know if that's possible at this stage. Can the local arm, KPMG South Africa, can it collapse? I mean, there's talk that it might collapse, it might lose enough clients, become unsustainable. Is it possible for such a thing to happen in this country?
It looks that way. I mean, I think the only people sitting there and wondering really in boardrooms about the contagion effects would be the bankers, right? Because they would be sitting there thinking, if we pull out of here, what exactly? But I think that was triggering the collapse of KPMG. But it's there. People speaking about it now, when people are cleaning up their CVs, I'm sure. But I was yesterday. I was looking at KPMG, and this is even this global, the global company that has been stuck in these corruption scandals. They were the auditors of FIFA. Mm. I was mind-boggling. So the entire organization, KPMG, is under a cloud, even outside of these borders. So but I think here the local arm is really on the threat of a collapse here. And what would happen then? You get like a Deloitte or PwC taking over their accounts and basically taking over their, like what happened to Arthur Andersen could be replayed again here, which. People are still playing with what actually would that mean to financial services in particular.
Well, I mean,
and the contagion effects within those within our sector.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, I think it almost would be a commendation if you plan illicit activities to hire them. You'd have a look at them and say, like, well, if they did FIFA's accounts, this is great for us. I mean, what do you think? But Tim, you were going to say?
No. I just wanted to come back at Sekou a little bit because you know, I mean. One half of me sort of slightly agrees with you, the other half doesn't. The half that agrees with you is that they don't, they are claiming, they're trying to pretend that they did, that they, nothing that they did was illegal. And, you know, even I, as a sort of kind of ordinary run-of-the-mill kind of person in South Africa, can see that a lot of what they did was dodgy. You know, I mean, this is going to go to court at some point and, you know, I bet you they're going to be found wanting. So you know, I agree with that part of it. The other thing, but what makes me kind of feel for them is that, you know, if you're in an organization, right, a news organization, there's lots of newspapers, there's lots of people doing all kinds of things. Are you responsible for something that some deep mess up that the Sunday Times makes? I mean, would you regard it as fair if you lost your job because the Sunday Times, something completely out of your control, completely out of your knowledge, you know, the, so there's what, 3,500 people who work for KPMG, you know, let's assume that, you know, 5% did something wrong. Does the organization die because of that 5%?
I'm not sure if you're mentioning the Sunday Times.
No, it's completely a coincidence.
I'm not sure if you're mentioning the Sunday Times.
This is what happened to Arthur Andersen, right? This is exactly what happened to Arthur Andersen. Some people messed up the Enron account.
And the entire thing collapsed.
Guys, yeah.
It's the exact same thing with the newspaper, as an editor of a newspaper, within Business Times or Financial Mail, within, if your staff does something here, rather dodgy, the final can comes to the editor, even though you had no idea or inkling of what the writer was doing. Yes. So I think, at the end of the day, you carry
the contagion cannot be limited to the four people that did this. Let's just start there. It's unfortunate that everyone else has to suffer because of the brand name. Right. There's a bank, it's called Standard Bank. It says it is concerned about KPMG's acknowledgement of misconduct. It's not at all concerned about what KPMG did. It's concerned about them admitting that they did. Now, that's in that very statement.
Stop playing with the English.
KPMG received 23 million rands for a report that could have cost less than 2 million rand. Mm. In that alone, there's a big problem. In Namibia, we've got in the Financial Mail exactly a similar story. Mm. KPMG South Africa did exactly the same thing to help the NAMPOWER again. So this is how KPMG operates. And then they have got the balls to go and lie in Parliament and say, we got rid of those people.
There is.
But, I mean, thing with KPMG is that, you know, it really, at this stage, it looks like the local business could collapse at some stage. I mean, there are rumors that it could be bought by Sizwe and Saluba.
Yeah. The question there is really, do we actually care if
people... Hey, that's my line.
do we actually care if the people that are enabling the fraudsters and the state capture collapse, do they even have a place in South Africa, anywhere in the world? We always go on and on about public sector corruption. Now, must we care if a private company must collapse because of the corruption that it enabled, because of the thieving that it's been allowing for the past 15 years by that family? Must we now care? And they have actually been auditing Telkom as well, your landline, all those bills. Now, must we care if KPMG collapses? There's dozens of other auditing
firms. We don't know the contagion effect. We don't quite understand it, right? So it's not about looking
after. The death of KPMG is the lesson that the rest of society does need. We can't prosecute the thieves. ourselves, but the market can prosecute those people that it can. But and if KPMG is those people, then let there be consequences.
No, absolutely.
We've got a guy called Sean, whatever his name is a public prosecutor. He's doing absolutely nothing. Now, we can't arrest the people that are accused of corruption. But we can prevent our own monies and our organization's businesses from supporting the corruption. And if KPMG has to be the sacrificial lamb, and actually, let's get this right here. KPMG is not a victim here. It's actually a player in this. So it's just desserts.
It certainly does look like it provided the veneer that certain people needed. But the problem is that there aren't many global institutions as EY, Ernst & Young, Deloitte, and
the banks, for example, need the big ones.
To have global reach to be able to audit in other countries. I mean, surely that's an important thing. Concentration of audit risk for the clients in this country wouldn't be
good. South Africa, the Reserve Bank said it wants only the four. That's not because the others can't audit. We've got Grant Thornton, it's an international organization. We've got PKF. It's not like there's anything special about any of the four. It's just that the Reserve Bank said we want these in the banks. In fact, not even the Banks Act says only the four must audit, but the Reserve Bank must approve the auditor, and the Reserve Bank has always approved the four. But is Grant Thornton incapable? Yes. Is PKF
That's a good
incapable?
Point. That's yes.
I mean, the truth of it is also that, you know, one of the things that the banks are concerned about is audit fees, because they're paying an enormous amount in audit fees, and so they're worried about the concentration of competition. That's the sort of one of the subtexts behind the Reserve Bank is they are paranoid about contagion, because that's their, you know, kind of responsibility. Yeah. But there wasn't any contagion when Arthur Andersen collapsed. You know, Arthur Andersen was there, and then it wasn't, exactly. And then the world continued.
If eight guys at KPMG are guilty of this.
What happened to Arthur Andersen? Or we like, it was a bump and we moved on, and we carried
Arthur
on.
Arthur Andersen is now KPMG.
There had to be an effect right then and there that we're living to this day, right? But we just, like, it came, it went, we moved on.
Yeah. So, Ron, do you feel that the story's been covered fairly by the media, and do you feel that KPMG is getting what it deserves?
KPMG is getting its just deserves, right, for what they did. But, like, the issue is when we pushing for the collapse of it, I think it may collapse, but we just, no one actually kind of gets the repercussions of it. No one's investigating what actually does it mean when KPMG falls to the side, right? And I know, like, okay, we can make the ethical call, like Sikonati is doing, they're wrong, the market needs to punish them, but no one has actually sat down and looked at what actually the mechanics are of a collapsing auditing firm. The thing with all of these, C-Suite and Lube and the smaller ones, they don't have that international network that KPMG offered. But I guess it deserves, well, the market is reacting the way.
Go to the same schools and qualify from the same schools. And there's only eight guys that were found to have done something wrong at KPMG. There's 3,000 other people that work there. Those people won't melt into the air when the brand collapses. They will go to the other firms, as they did when there was a company
called
Arthur
Andersen. Do the other firms have the capacity to take them on?
This capacity was not brought into South Africa by KPMG. There was a firm called Arthur Andersen before. There is now KPMG. There will be another one. And I've given you two already below those, Grant Thornton and PKF, just as a start.
Okay, guys. Well, that's the first half of Editing Aloud. You've heard it here that KPMG might have to die to satisfy Sikonati's taste for blood. Join us after the break. Welcome back to Editing Aloud. Guys, we've got a crisis in this country's economy at the moment. Growth is at, I think the IMF this week said that they would cut their forecast to 0.7% this year. And yet the JSE is hitting record highs the whole time. And largely I think that's because Naspers has lifted the entire market up 56% this year is Naspers. Tim, how do we look at the JSE's rise? What does it mean? Is it real?
I mean, no, it's fascinating. I think it's fascinating. Because it's not just the JSE. I mean, we've broken five records in five consecutive days on the JSE. But stock markets around the world are at record highs. It seems like, and actually, that's not where it ends. If you kind of look a little bit more closely, it's not only the JSEs that are only the stock markets that are at records. Property markets are really, they're way over what they were when the when there was supposedly a, you know, a global crisis in the global bubble in the property market. And if you look at the comparison between the rental rate and the resale rate, it's also in most developed markets, it's at a kind of record level. So, you know, the Economist had quite a good cover last week, which said there's a boom in everything, every aspect of every. So, why is that happening? You know, why is there a boom in everything?
That's the question.
It's a. I think it it has to do with synchronized global growth, with a sense that the. With an aging global population, there's big demographic trends that sort of sit behind all of these things, and because interest rates are the whole scepter of interest rates increasing has is, you know, the most cute little purry cat that you've ever seen, you know what I mean? So and everybody expected interest rates by this stage to have really exploded. They never did.
But Ron, there's a lot of dissonance in the fact that, you know, Tim talks about global growth increasing. We've never been so fragile in terms of growth and our forward prospects for growth.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the dissonance between how we look at the JSE and that growth issue? Because we're not in a growing economy. I suppose we have most of our exchanges based overseas.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think with our JSE, it doesn't reflect the actual fundamentals of the SA economy. And we're just flowing with where the hot money is going, right? And right now, it's risk on, and that's emerging markets and so on. I don't know what the Ryan is a particular, another question altogether. But the thing is, my question has always, I think it's been there since 8 years ago, when is the bubble going to break? But we've had like 9 years of consecutive growth in the US, and at some point, all this to me, I mean, I'm just over worrying, Ron, is that at some point there's the bubble has to pop at some point. And I think that is why there's all excitement about Janet Yellen and whether she'll raise rates fast enough. And I think at some point, this thing's got to break. I mean, like 10 cents valuation, Nasdaq valuation, global markets, S&P, the Apple, and how it responded to the latest phone. There wasn't much excitement there. There's no, so fundamentally, Apple as a company hasn't seen that hype we've seen over the past few years. So I think at some point there has to be some correction that must come into the market. And as I say, everything's a balloon all across the place.
I've been expecting that with Bitcoin for months, and it just hasn't happened. It's gone the other way.
Yeah.
But Sekhanathi, I mean, deals are happening in this economy. We have last week, Glencore was apparently now the second potential bidder for Chevron. I think it's about 15 or 13 billion rand they plan to pay for it. I mean, that's a big deal. Big deals are happening in this economy, despite the fact that our politics is so messed up and our growth is so low. How is that? Why is that happening?
Look, I'll avoid the bigger picture for a while, but the most interesting thing about that Glencore deal buying Chevron is that the BEE partners, who own 25% of the company, actually rose and said, okay, we don't want the Chinese. We will now take our preemptive right to buy the rest of the business, and we'll go find a buyer. And they went and found Glencore. That's the kind of empowerment we want, where the minority partner, the guys that are to be empowered, must find people they can work best with. And it helps, of course, that it's also Glencore that is buying the asset. It is listed here in South Africa, and it's bringing that into it to be available to the rest of the economy. So I take my hat off to Mashudu Romano, who's leading the empowerment consortium at Chevron there, and I don't know what why they didn't want
Ivan
the
Glasenberg,
Chinese.
Actually, more with the man who
maneuvered this whole thing. It's not quite so simple.
When you exercise
your right as a minority, the idea isn't that you exercise it on behalf of somebody else. And also the thing is that, you know, South Africa wants a refinery, a working refinery, right? Glencore traders, what they want is the ability to move the oil.
Are you guys actually saying Mashudu did not have the power to preempt his.
No, he had the power, but the idea of you're making it out as though he went and found the money. He didn't. No.
He went and found the investor. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but that's not like he gets the investment. And the other thing is that it's unclear whether or not they will make the same commitments to keeping the refinery going.
I doubt very much. Have they ever done it before? Has Glencore ever done that in their life? They built any? No, they traded. Glencore doesn't do what you think they will do.
But not to take anything away from
Moshoed's great thinking. However,
smartness
this
here.
Is different. This is Glencore. It's a fantastically difficult decision.
And
they don't invest in infrastructure.
Either they go with their BRICS partner, or they go with the BE guys inside of. Sort of go with the BE guys and with with Glencore
does not play an infrastructure bill. They will not. They're not going to play in refinery reinvesting there.
They have promised.
I don't quite believe that.
And Moshoed Rahman is going to flip his stake.
Exactly.
So he buys and sells. Well, you might applaud
the Romanos and for the ingenuity
I'll
of it.
I'll stand in my little corner and shut up.
I'll applaud
me and Moshoed Rahman.
That's how they operate, right?
You'll take your millions into your corner.
So let's talk about something. Let's talk about something less controversial. McKinsey and Trillion.
Oh yeah,
oh
no,
yeah.
That's very
that's no controversy there. No controversy.
Now McKinsey has said they're not going to pay back the money. They're going to put in a reserve fund, and they'll see what the court says. What does that actually mean? What are they saying? Is McKinsey just seeing what's happened to KPMG and thinking let's not admit to anything, or what's actually happening?
It actually means if there's still anyone left at Eskom who can draft legal documents and hand them to court, if there is someone, and the moment anyone raises their head, they will be suspended. So in the event that there is someone left who manages to drive all the way from Megawatt Park to the High Court in Johannesburg and convinces a judge that we must pay back the money, we will pay. Otherwise, we are not averse to the fact that we actually did not really earn the money. So they have said it was not us. They're not denying that the event.
But doesn't this mean that McKinsey is pretty sure on their legal standing? Doesn't it put it back the onus on? They're pretty sure that.
To fight it. I mean, Ron, you know, between McKinsey and Trillion, they got 1.6 billion rand. That's a lot of money. Yeah. I mean, part of it is, you know, you might have done a fairly good job, which they're going to have to defend in court.
But
the scale of the fees seems outrageous for any consulting fee. Is that right? I mean,
no, it is outrageous, and I think what's pretty greedy for McKinsey is that I think they think legally they've signed all the contracts, all the T's, dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's, and they're pretty sure that in court they probably wouldn't. But ethically, I mean, they know they're in the wrong, right? But I just think it kind of says, look,
but they
bring
said,
it on,
but they
right?
said that this contract is completely in line with the international.
Yeah, so they kind of like.
So now, so you know, that gives us an idea about how much they're charging their clients everywhere.
Exactly.
In the world.
Which brings us to another point is that one of our colleagues here is upset that Standard Bank, for example, still uses McKinsey as a contractor.
Which colleague is that?
McKinsey.
It's a colleague who often gets quite riled up about things. So perhaps that person could share with us his response to McKinsey's Standard Bank contracts.
The fact that Standard Bank had McKinsey and SAP and then KPMG as its consultants and auditors was just enough for me. But what really, I could use another word, but will be taken to the ombudsman. what really was the point for me, like where I reached the end of the road with them, with Standard Bank. My mother has been banking with them since 1970, and she's the only person since 1976 around there when I was born, and she's the first person that ever had a bank account in my family. That relationship with, as far as I'm concerned, is over. They said they actually are concerned about KPMG acknowledging what they did. They are not at all concerned about what KPMG has already admitted to have done. They are just concerned about. Anyway, they have McKinsey on the side. Now that shows you exactly how they roll. Unfortunately, Sim is a good Catholic guy. Sim Tshabalala, the CEO of Standard Bank. But I have moved my little business, at least the transactional business. I need now to find a bank that will give me a better rate on the home loan so we can move.
Oh, there we go. Nice. I will pitch there.
What's interesting is a lot of people didn't know that Standard Bank even used McKinsey. It's a company that has had two CEOs until recently. They have thousands of strategic advisors, and yet they needed consultants too. I mean, this country seems to be completely agog with consultants. Is that, Tim, a fair reflection?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing about consultancies, I mean, it's sort of internationally, the consultancies have been just tearing away over the last decade or so. Companies are really finding more and more need for them, but the reason for that is, you know, you can be summarized in a single word, and that word is disruption. All kinds of organizations are worried about disruption. They don't know what to do about it. The carpet is shifting under everybody with new digital options, new startup companies, and so in this environment, consultancies are making hay, and there are massively different opinions about whether they're useful but expensive, very expensive and not useful. You know what I mean? You could find a whole range of people who have different views on kind of where they sit. I think they're worth it. I think it's worth getting consultancy in because it just takes you out of the kind of comfort zone of the existing management. And the one way you can do that is, but they're expensive.
They are so worth it that Eskom has been having McKinsey as a consultant since 2005. And Eskom has been downgraded every year since 2004, such that it's falling at the bottom end of the junk. It's not even now. Yes. It's almost not going to even make it to where the global ratings agencies can say, we're rating them ZZ, whatever the last scale
it's
is.
It's not a perfect answer.
They are so worth it that Eskom is paying about 12% interest per annum, which is... The worst possible bank client will be paying that kind of interest rate. They are so worth it that they have taken 1.6 billion rand of Eskom's money for 6 months of work that nobody knows exactly what that work is. No one can show us, and no one can show that court an audited statement, audited figures, of course, not audited by KPMG, that says, here's this 30 billion rand saving.
Do
that
they not
you
build? Who advised Eskom on building the Medupi and Kusile? Who was behind that build? Like, who was advised? I mean, these are actual infrastructure projects.
That build started in 2007.
Yeah, I'm asking.
McKinsey was a consultant since 2005.
Yeah, so I'm asking.
Figure.
So I'm asking.
but you know,
is that not value? I'm not defending McKinsey here. I'm playing the devil's advocate.
Is that not
you in particular? So I'm asking, in building that, were they not playing a role in?
Well, look at SAA. SAA has had turnaround plan after turnaround plan. So you had consultants every year saying we'll turn around the airline, and none of them have done it. Surely that's money down the drain.
But the thing is that you can't. You know, it doesn't matter what. If the company doesn't listen to what the consultants say, then obviously the money is completely wasted. Yes. You know, all of the consultancies that did examinations of SAA, they all came up with almost the same or, you know, different sort of ideas about how to restructure the organization, and the management never listened to them. That's hardly the...
And you guys are saying all of that to convince us that McKinsey was so good.
No, we're not saying...
No.
Sicko.
Okay, guys.
Case by case.
That's our show for this week. What you've learned from this is you should never hire consultants.